My name is Victoria Glasson and I'm editor for Diabetes Therapy. Welcome to our Technology in Diabetes podcast. Today we'll be continuing with part two of our podcast with Dr. Sufyan Hussain and Dana Lewis discussing the artificial pancreas system.
So how do you see things developing for diabetes technology now?
Ideally, I would love to see more of the ideas developed in the patient community that are solving really concrete and discrete problems with regards to quality of life be involved and brought into the traditional academic and industry development processes. And I would also like to see those development processes and timelines sped up, because a lot of the technology development that we're talking now is software and algorithm development. And I think we need to encourage the companies to separate their development timeline of software from the hardware timeline and the hardware testing process that tends to be a little bit slower and tends to slow down a lot of other things. So I would like to see more technology developed more quickly and meet the standards that are being set out by the diabetes community themselves.
Thanks for that, Dana. So just another slight controversial question, if that's okay. So there have been some controversies around using what's called DIY CGM or something in Europe, certainly that's very widely used, called Libre. And obviously, you know, in the States, that's probably been more of a recent thing, as Libre has been out in the UK and in Europe, certainly for quite some time. So that's been one sort of area which I see that there's a little bit of disparity in views about how we apply artificial pancreas systems. And related to that, also reporting of issues. So I don't know what your thoughts are on those two aspects, you know, the DIY CGM and reporting.
Well, I think the word you use, disparity, is really, really key. I think there are disparities in diabetes care and access around the world, even in what are considered to be, you know, very forward developed countries. People are struggling with access and affording insulin. The same thing goes with CGM or things like flash glucose monitoring, like you mentioned. And I think the cost question drives people to make different choices than they might otherwise if their pump and CGM sensors and their insulin was fully covered. And so I think the question around DIY components like the flash glucose monitoring being converted into a continuous glucose monitor and things like that are a symptom of that. And I think it would be great to see the world address that. Because there are too many people going without insulin around the world. There are too many people being forced to make choices, which we maybe don't agree with, but we may not be in their situation and understand, you know, their choice in terms of the financial situation that makes them make a particular decision about that. So I think in regards to reporting issues, one of the things that the community is designed around is safety. We care about our safety and we care about the safety of the community. And so we have always been fully transparent from day one, and that includes reporting issues or reporting concerns. And that means you can report it anonymously in the community, you can post it to GitHub, you can send an email, you can report within the community. But as a lot of people have learned this year, you can also report to your local regulatory body if you're having issues with a system, even if it's an off-label use. And what was also interesting to learn this year is that a lot of the diabetes community didn't know that even with on-label commercial use of diabetes products, if they have an issue, that can be reported to their doctor or the regulatory body. So again, I think the question comes up of, okay, do we need more reporting? It seems to me that we need increased awareness around reporting, not only in DIY, but in diabetes in general, because so many people didn't realize that if they had an issue with a product they were using with on-label or off-label use, that could and should be reported to their local regulatory bodies.
That's really true. And I think, you know, you're absolutely right that most healthcare professionals wouldn't have been aware that any issues that arise on even commercially approved systems have a certain reporting channel. And I think what DIY has done has brought that right to the forefront. And you're absolutely right that if it's DIY that's being put under scrutiny, that similarly commercial systems should also be having the same standards, and any issues should be reported in the same manner. And certainly in the UK, we've got reports via the MHRA, in the US via the FDA. So those standards need to also be applied to commercial systems. And I think the point, you know, you made about DIY CGM and the use of Libre is absolutely spot on with respect to cost. And you know, again, you know, diabetes has always had a DIY, been DIY, really. I mean, that's the nature of it. And even looking back 20, 30 years ago, when people I look after now are telling me about their experiences of how they use blood glucose test strips, which initially, you know, was a new thing back almost 30 years ago when you think about it. But even the cost of that was fairly high, so you'd only get that one strip a week. So the way a lot of people coped was you cut it into four, and that was a very common situation, which again, in this day and age would be viewed as a complete DIY, but it was very, very cost driven. And as of course sensor prescriptions became more widely available, that behavior didn't have to continue, because obviously that exposes you towards errors and potential errors. So I think you're right, it is a cost-based thing, and we'll reflect a little bit more on the cost and accessibility in a little bit, but I'm grateful for your comments on that.
Just one other comment I would make on DIY, I'm glad you brought up the test strip example. I think when people look at DIY APS or closed looping, they think, oh my gosh, this is completely new. This has never been done before. Patients are doing something that, you know, we didn't give them permission to do. Well, if you actually look back to home fingerstick blood glucose monitoring, that originally was protested by healthcare providers who thought patients shouldn't have their blood glucose data because they might do something wrong or do something that we didn't approve them to do with it. And there was actually a movement by patients to have home blood glucose monitoring, and that then became the norm. And similarly, the use of CGM, originally the first CGMs were blinded and the data was only available to healthcare providers. And a lot of people said, oh no, we don't want patients to have this data because they might do something with it. And well, guess what? Now the norm is for patients to have access to their data in real time. And I think APS and automated insulin delivery being DIY is just the latest in that series of examples where patients have really, really pushed for what then becomes the standard of care for the next, you know, decade or 20 to 30 years after that.
So true. So Dana, any concerns as we move forward for DIY use in the real world?
I think a lot of my concerns have to do with the access and affordability that we've talked about. I think people make different decisions based on the gaps that have been left by the healthcare system in terms of the coverage of insulin or CGM or things like that. Or originally this all started because of the lack of customizable CGM alarms and the gap, and there was no commercial solution for closed looping. And now we're seeing different choices being made because the commercial technology, at least some of the first generation, is not necessarily meeting people's expectations in terms of what this technology being capable of doing. So I'm excited to see more conversations and more partnerships between industry with the diabetes community and industry and researchers learning from what we've shown to be possible and what the trade-offs are in terms of real life and this technology to make sure that we can make this technology safe, but effective and also widely available and affordable.
Absolutely. And moving on to our final few questions, Dana, I know it's been a long interview for you. So have you changed the landscape for type 1 diabetes for the better? What's next for you?
I still think we have changes to do. I still think we need to work with traditional researchers and industry to bring this technology to more markets, more widely available, and making sure that it's affordable and accessible. And I also think that we have work to do in terms of changing the healthcare system so that when patients who are using this technology end up in the emergency room for whatever reason, or they have surgery for something else, that patients are able to use this technology while they're also addressing other healthcare issues. And I think also routine diabetes care needs to evolve to match the potential of what this technology has to offer. So I would say there's still work to be done. There's still changes that need to be made. I think the community and myself included still want to push in that direction because we see what's possible and we see it coming. And I think we'll get there in the next couple of years.
Absolutely agree, and it's really positive step forwards. And I think, you know, for me as a healthcare professional, it's also one of the big areas: how do we improve access to technology to most of the people, realizing that it's not reachable to most, even in the UK with the free healthcare service. And certainly when you also look at it worldwide, having been raised in a third world country myself, it's even more scarce. And even getting, you know, adequate insulin and testing strips is only accessible to you know, those who are really privileged. So a lot more needs to be done, and hope that those like us who are benefiting from great care and systems can use some of the energies that we have in social agendas that are trying to address these issues. And I hope that that's something that can also come to the forefront. I know you've been involved in stuff like this, Dana, so it'll be great to hear more about that from you if there's any particular aspects you wanted to emphasize.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought it up. This is exactly one of the reasons why I support the Life for a Child movement, because there are about 18,000 kids or more worldwide who would be dying if we weren't getting them insulin and blood glucose test strips, and working with different countries' governments to bring education for healthcare providers so that they can diagnose kids and get them insulin, whereas before children would die because they wouldn't get diagnosed and they wouldn't get insulin in time. So I think it's challenging a lot of times when we're talking about technology, because a lot of people perceive either they know diabetes and they feel like it's a solved problem, or they've heard enough to know that, okay, you just take insulin and, you know, that's fine, right? Like everything's covered. But I think what we've realized is there are still issues worldwide with regards to insulin coverage and access and affordability that need to be addressed. And again, like we talked about in the beginning conversation, even for those of us who are privileged enough to have access to insulin and have access to some of this other technology, you know, diabetes is still hard. There's still so much we don't understand about it, and we're learning. But I think the important thing is for all of us to focus our energies constructively and collaborate on the problems we can solve, like getting, you know, insulin to kids in these countries that otherwise wouldn't, you know, be able to survive without it. And then focus on pushing the technology forward and then continuing to make it more accessible and affordable. I just think there's so much to be done. It needs all of our hands. It needs all of our energies. And I'm excited to see more and more collaborations heading in those directions, because again, I'd like to see the efforts in these spaces be multiplicative rather than additive.
Great. Yes, really positive stuff. And finally, Dana, from your perspective, the future of diabetes, where is it going?
I think the future of diabetes is going to a place where the biggest concern will just be keeping your system running, with keeping your sensor going, keeping your pump set going, but, you know, glycemic excursions being out of range, being an occasional blip, rather than an everyday constant frustration. So I'm really looking forward to people having the perspective that diabetes is not the thing that they feel like they need to see most cured, or that we have a cure, ideally. But I, for example, I have type 1 diabetes. I've had it for 17 years, but I've also been living with celiac disease for 11 years. And now, given the technology, I feel like my biggest frustration in terms of my health is celiac and finding access to gluten-free food. And I would maybe rather have a cure for celiac first, because I think the technology has come such a long way in type 1 diabetes. And I would love for this technology to be accessible and the healthcare system be supportive enough where everybody could feel like diabetes is not the hassle and the burden and doesn't bring pain and suffering the way it brings to people today.
Absolutely. In terms of automating the whole process as well, and getting that access right to everyone so they can use it and benefit from it.
Dana, I've just got a couple of questions for you.
What would be your top tips to somebody who is starting out in this process, to somebody who would like to adopt this management style?
My tips would be to start reading and start listening in the community, because there are now thousands of people worldwide speaking multiple different languages who are sharing their experiences and documenting what their learning curve was like. And I think being the first and doing DIY can sometimes be hard, but now we're at the point where there are a lot of people to learn from. And so you can learn from their mistakes and their learning curve to expedite your own learning curve. And also learn to be comfortable asking for help. You do not have to do this alone. DIY does not mean do it alone. And there's absolutely a community of people who have, you know, worked with this technology and experienced this technology themselves, who are happy to answer questions and happy to pay it forward themselves and share their experience and expertise with you.
Can I also ask your opinion of patient inclusion within industry? Do you think that enough is being done there?
I think more can be done in patient inclusion. I think whether we're talking about industry development or research, I think there have always been things like focus groups and things like that in research and development. And that is a way to include patients, but that is not the only way to include patients. And I would like to see more inclusion at the start of the prioritization of deciding what to research, what to study, what problems to address in terms of development and design. And I think having more patients taking a bigger role earlier in those processes, I think we will see better technology developed that more closely fits the user needs in the real world.
Brilliant. And then my final question. Community physicians and nurse practitioners, they don't get to go to conferences. They're not always at the forefront of education. How do you think we engage these members, and how do you think that we educate them to make sure that they are educated and are able to help patients who want to adopt this management style?
I think that's a great question, and I'm hoping for insight from endocrinologists who have managed, you know, type 1 diabetes the longest and the most closely to help figure out how to reach these healthcare providers in their local communities and, you know, share education with them. You know, it could be sending them, you know, guidelines or best practice documents. It could be sending them things like the patient-built documentation or books like mine that are both for a patient and a healthcare provider audience. But I think it's a really important question because there's a lot of healthcare providers that already don't feel comfortable addressing diabetes, even without this technology. And I think adding this level of automated technology is going to further make them uncomfortable with managing it, which leaves a lot of patients, unfortunately, in a gap. And I would love to see no more patients falling through the gap in the healthcare because of the technology they're choosing to use or because of the fact that they have diabetes. But I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in that space.
So Dana, before I wrap up, any questions for me?
I think I'm good. Thank you for having me on the podcast, and thank you for raising a lot of really, really interesting questions.
Dana's book, Automated Insulin Delivery, is available on artificialpancreasbook.com. The link will be shared alongside this podcast commentary. Dana, thanks a lot for joining us and giving your excellent insights and perspective. Having built the system, used it, being involved in the journey of implementing it and researching it, influencing regulators, influencing industry, influencing healthcare professionals, it's a really, really powerful story. I'm sure there's still more to come. And I think that the bit that always excites me is that attitude of paying it forward, that attitude that, you know, magnifies the actions we're all doing and taking that view of supporting each other as a community. So thank you so much for giving us your insight and the time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having this conversation, and to everybody who's listening and doing their own work to move diabetes forward, thank you.
You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Rapid Plus podcast with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the website.